Midwest farms grow more corn and soybeans than anything else. Before getting to market, those crops are stored in large grain bins holding tons of corn or beans at farms and grain elevators. For those who work around them, those bins are a familiar sight, but they can also be deadly. Today on Focus, we'll be talking about grain bin accidents, why they happen, and how to prevent them. Our guests include people who have grown up around grain bins, studied ways to make them safer, and gone in to rescue people trapped in those bins. Plus, a farmer who was buried under hundreds of pounds of corn in a grain bin will tell us how he survived. I'm Jim Meadows, making grain bins safer on Focus. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. If you've never worked on a farm, a grain bin filled with tons of corn or soybeans might be as unfamiliar a sight as a diamond mine. But if you grew up on a farm or in a farming community, they're a normal part of daily life. What's new is the attention being paid to the danger grain bins can pose if you're not careful around them. Fortunately, grain bin accidents are a pretty rare thing, but the number of cases in which people are buried under corn or soybeans in grain bins seems to be rising this year after apparently having leveled off for a few years. Just last month, a man died in a grain bin accident in Sydney here in Champaign County. Today on Focus, we're paying attention to grain bin accidents. And later on this hour, we'll hear from an emergency worker who went into a grain elevator to retrieve the person trapped inside in that Sydney accident. Right now, let me welcome Todd Gleason from the University of Illinois Extension. You can hear him every day on WILL's Closing Market Report and Saturday mornings on Commodity Week. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me here today.
And I also want to welcome William Field. He's a professor of agriculture and biological engineering at Purdue University in Indiana, and he's made a study of grain bin safety. Professor Field, welcome to Focus.
Thank you for the invitation to be here today.
But to really understand what happens in a grain bin accident, you might want to ask someone who's been in one. Eric Baker is from the little town of New Providence in Hardin County, Iowa, and he is the survivor of a grain bin accident. And Eric, I'm very glad you could join us on the show today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Now, Eric, I watched the video that you made for the Des Moines Register on their website, and we have a link to it on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. You're standing in front of an empty grain bin there. Was that the one where you were trapped?
Yes, it was, actually.
Okay. It looks big. It's big. It looks big enough to hold church in.
Yes, it's a 60,000 bushel grain bin.
So, but it wasn't empty when the accident happened. Could you walk us through what happened?
Well, what happened was the grain bin was about a halfway full with corn. After they drained it and trucked everything off, it turned out there would be about 23,000 bushel left. And what happened is we had bad moldy corn in there, and we thought at the time that just chunks of that moldy corn was blocking the hole in the bottom of it, so no corn was coming out. So my job was to go inside the grain bin on top of the corn and with this about 9-foot PVC pipe try to poke and find that moldy corn and break it up on top of the corn.
So you're trying to essentially, it's something that's corn that it's sort of clumped together?
Yes, mostly.
And you were trying to push it down?
Yes, yep.
But something went wrong?
Well, what ended up happening is that we didn't find out until later. There was about an 8-inch shelf of bad corn in the hole in the middle of it, about a foot from the bottom of it, of the grain bin. And what happened is I broke that shelf open, and then that's when I got sucked down.
Okay. What were you standing on yourself at that time?
Just corn.
You were standing on top of the corn?
Yep. I mean, keep in mind, though, I did this all day Monday, all day Tuesday, and then this happened on the second load out of it on Wednesday.
Okay. So it sounds like when you say a shelf, does that mean that maybe some corn had clumped together and there was loose corn, or what was beneath it?
Well, when they got to it with the vac after they got me out, it was just really finey corn that was wet and it started molding together. And it just creates a shelf, and then all the corn gets sucked out from under the shelf, from the auger, and then when you break that shelf open, it just all collapses. It has to fill that void, and it just collapses.
And you fell in, and Eric, can you tell us what was going through your mind when you fell into that corn?
I mean, it really happened so fast, I didn't really have time to think about it while it was happening. I was ankle deep, you know, just standing there working the whole time, to being 2 feet of corn over my head in less than 10 seconds.
It was that quick?
Oh, it was, yes, very quick. I looked down because I felt something crawling up my leg, and then I realized it was the corn, and I had a rope on my shoulder, actually, and by the time I was able to turn my body and grab the rope, I was waist deep.
Now, by waist deep, and you still kept on falling through, or it kept on falling on you?
Well, it kept sucking me down. I was going down with the corn.
Okay, so you couldn't hold on to the rope?
No, absolutely not.
The pressure from the corn, that must have been pretty heavy.
They're guessing that when I was under the corn, they're guessing that my feet were under about 900 pounds of pressure, and my torso would have been under about 400 to 500 pounds of pressure.
So that was, I take it, the very least, not pleasant.
No, it was not.
Well, did it limit your ability, just be able to the take a breath as far as the pressure on the corn was concerned?
Yes, definitely. Let's see, after they pulled me out, I went down at about 10:33 a.m. is when I went under. The rescue workers found my hand at 12:52. They found my face at 1:17, and they pulled me out at 3:02 in the afternoon.
Okay, and again, the time when you fell in, what time was that?
10:33.
So you were there for...
I was completely submerged for 2 hours by myself, yeah.
Now, it's important to note here, you were wearing some special sort of mask.
It's actually it's called Air Trends, and it's actually a mask made for carpentry work, like sanding and stuff. And we just bought it at a Farm Progress show earlier this year, and it has a ventilation system. It doesn't make oxygen. It just takes oxygen and passes it through this ventilation system and then puts it in the mask. But imagine a hockey mask, like a full face shield hockey mask. That's kind of what it looks like.
And when you say a ventilation system, there was actually something mechanical pushing air into the mask?
It's battery operated, yes.
Okay, so it's not just a mask by itself, but something that was bringing you air, and it sounds like that was really a lifesaver for you.
Oh, I would have been dead 100% without it. No questions asked.
Okay. I'm just wondering, how much do those things cost?
$350, I believe.
Okay. You were in there. You were just trapped. It sounds like you couldn't move for a couple of hours. I have to ask, what was going through your mind?
Time was nothing. I mean, there was no such thing as time down there, but I'd have to guess the first 5 minutes, I was just thinking about what happened, just okaying it with myself, to be honest. Just, you know, this is the situation I'm in. And then probably the next 10 minutes, I'd say, I basically okayed it with myself that I was going to die. No one goes into corn and comes out. I mean, it hasn't happened before me, actually. Then that was that. And then after all that process, I started thinking, and I was like, you know, I'm still alive and I'm still breathing. You know, maybe if I just keep breathing, you know, I know help's on the way. Because, I mean, I knew there was another semi coming back, and I knew they knew I was in the grain bin when they left. And so then, I just focused on breathing. When I got to the hospital, 35 minutes after getting pulled out, my heart rate was 171 beats a minute. The doctors guessed that the entire time my chest was submerged, my heart rate would have been between 230 and 250 beats a minute.
That's really intense.
Yeah, they considered 265 to be a heart attack.
Well, and maybe you should ask let people know how old you are.
23.
Now, when people finally made contact with you, what went through your mind at that point? When you knew that you were going to be rescued?
Well, I actually didn't think I was going to survive until I pulled my feet out, to be honest. But so what happened is the semi driver came back, and he climbed up there because, I mean, they knew I was there. and they couldn't find the helmet that I was wearing, and my truck was still on the site, so they knew I was there. So he climbed up the ladder and looked in, and the rope apparently was just going straight in the ground, just as tight as can be, straight into the ground, or straight into the corn, I guess. And when I felt the rope pull, because he pulled on the rope just to see, you know, what happened, and when I felt that panic set over then. It was a very touchy situation, but then I was able to control myself again, and, you know, then I started thinking, okay, now they know that I'm in the corn, so, you know, now it's going to be another 30 minutes until rescue people come. And that was a long 30 minutes.
they were finally able to extricate you. You must have felt really relieved when that happened.
Yes, absolutely.
And since all this happened, you're still farming, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And this particular grain bin, I understand it wasn't at your farm, but there was nothing out of the ordinary about this bin.
Nope, nothing at all. I mean, like I said, there was some bad corn in it, but, I mean, until this happened, there was no way to know that shelf was there.
Have you worked in a grain bin since all this happened?
Yeah, I've actually cleaned out the two other grain bins on that same site, and then just cleaned out one of ours last week.
And does it feel any different to get inside a bin and work now after going through that ordeal?
The one part that got me kind of shooken up a little bit, so the helmet I was wearing, when the truck driver came back and pulled on the rope, shortly after that my helmet started beeping at me that it was on low battery. And then I was cleaning out a grain bin last week here at the house, and I was just cleaning it out, not in any trouble or anything, but the helmet started beeping at me, low battery again, and that was intense. But other than that, not really. I'm just a lot more careful. Just every step I make is just, okay, you know, what's going to happen if I put my foot here? What's going to happen if I put my foot here? And
is this unavoidable to work in a grain bin? Sometimes you have to walk on grain, and you don't know what's underneath exactly.
It is unavoidable, yes. However, there are extra safety precautions that you can take. For example, after this whole deal, we went and bought, top-of-the-line safety harnesses for grain bin stuff. And then the most dangerous part about it is, I mean, if you're just walking on top of the corn, it's not that bad because there's nothing moving under you. But when the auger's running like it was in my circumstance, that's when it's very dangerous because there's always corn moving underneath you.
So you had machinery moving the corn underneath you at the time?
Yes, the auger was, yes.
Okay. Well, Eric, I'm real glad you're okay, and I wish you a safe farming career.
Well, thank you.
And thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today on Focus.
Yep, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And I want to go now to our guests, and Todd Gleason and Professor William Field. And I don't know how this sounds to you, Professor Field, if I could bring you in as far as, you know, what happened here and just the things that went wrong in that incident in Iowa with Eric Baker. Is that typical of the sort of accidents when they happen in grain bins?
Well, what Eric just described is fairly typical of incidents that we've investigated over the last 25 or 30 years. And one of the key factors is that there's a direct correlation with out-of-condition grain that's moldy, crusted, damaged, or wet that doesn't flow well, and an increased risk of entrapment. And then the second factor that just catches everybody is leaving the auger running while you're working over top of it, which when that auger does break through any material or there's a flow of material into the outlet over the auger, that there's going to be a rapid flow of grain that'll pull anybody in, and not no rope or handle or that they can grab a hold of is going to stop them from being drawn into that grain because of the tremendous amount of draw that's on that person. So that's a pretty typical example, and I've heard that same story. I think Eric mentioned that he didn't know of anyone who had survived that before. We have talked to people that have survived under a substantial amount of grain and have survived, and I think that those people are very, very few and far behind and between.
And, talking here also with Todd Gleason, someone who grew up and worked on grain bins as a kid, and it is often teenagers who are working in grain bins. It's not like this is some alien territory. This is just sort of an everyday place if you're living on a farm or in a farm town.
Oh, sure, if you grow up on a farm. If you live in a farm town, probably not. But if you grow up on a farm, you've most certainly been in a grain bin or with flowing grain. A couple of things for those who don't know what it might be like. If you think of an hourglass and the way it drains, that's what flowing grain kind of looks like. The sand's dropping through an hourglass. And so if you get caught in the middle of it, it doesn't take very long to move pretty quickly into the grain flow and then to be covered really fast. I think 5 to 10 seconds covers it really fast. You know, I think the thing about his story were the things that went right as opposed to the things that went wrong.
One of the things is that he had that respirator mask on.
Yeah, he had a helmet on. He had at least a rope, if not a harness, and they went and bought. This was a farmer, true, right?
He's a farmer. He farms.
He had an awfully big grain bin, but it was a farmer. And I'm not sure how many farmers actually have this equipment on their farm.
Mm-hmm. And I should note, this was actually not his farm.
Right.
It was a friend's farm. Someone else's farm that he was on, but it wasn't different from the bin that he has on the farm that he works on with his dad, I believe.
Yeah, and the thing that went truly wrong and that didn't harm him, which surprised me, was that the auger was running. That was the first question I wrote down when you started talking with him was the auger running? Because you always have to shut it off. You always have to shut the auger off. If you're going to go into grain bin to do anything, shut the auger off.
Okay. This is Focus on WILL, and we are talking about the sort of tragic accidents that can happen to people who work on farms in grain bins. If you're from a farm family, if you've worked in and around grain bins, we'd like to hear from you. What's it like working in a grain bin? What do you do to stay safe? You can call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus 580. Talking here with Todd Gleason from the U of I Extension and Professor William Field with Purdue University. And Professor Field, I understand you've been looking at this phenomenon of the dangers that can happen with grain bins for a while. I'm wondering, how many accidents are there, say, in a year in this country?
Well, it's an interesting account here. Just briefly, back when I first joined the Purdue staff in September of 1977, we had an incident in northern Indiana in which a man died in a very small bin of grain, and the local fire department didn't have a clue why that person was caught in there. And I was involved in a post-event training session with several fire departments that responded. And I was so fascinated by the incident and the difficulty that first responders had, we began to collect cases from across the country during that year, and I've been doing it ever since, sort of almost as a sideline to what I do here. And we've collected data on about 1,500 incidents that have occurred in agricultural confined spaces, of which about 1,050 of those have involved flowing grain in some way.
So that's 1,050 over what period of years?
It's about 19, around 1970 or so.
Okay.
Most of them have occurred, during this more recent period, and we're able to identify these cases a lot easier today with electronic search capabilities that we didn't have early on. We just had clippings and reports that people sent in. And so we're looking at the last three or so years. In 2010, we had 57 cases across the country, and then we had 27 and then 19. And what's kind of a little bit disappointing to us is that we've had more in 2013 than we had in all of 2012.
So already with only about 8 months into the year, it's above the number we had in all of last year?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Do we know why?
Well, we're looking at that right now. It's just why we're seeing this sort of a little blip that is occurring as it did in 2010. We know in 2010 we had a significantly poor corn crop out there. A lot of corn went into storage in 2009 that was wet and and wasn't dried properly. And when they started taking it out in 2010, that's when we saw a lot of these cases occurred. When we had the low year, which was one of the lowest on record, in 2011, we had an excellent corn crop. We had very few problems with out of condition grain.
So we're talking about something where it's really, really something among the many things that farmers can't really control, which is the weather. And the weather can affect the crop you're bringing in, and that can affect the safety conditions in the bin.
Well, one of the things we're trying to do is marry the problem of grain bin safety with grain quality management. And we've done a lot of work in that area here, where we've tried to encourage growers to look at their crop, and maybe in a different perspective, is that if they're able to manage that crop better, it's worth more to them when it comes time to sell it. There's less frustrations about getting it out of storage, and it greatly reduces the potential for engulfment in a bin. If you can empty a 60,000 bushel bin down to the point that, you know, gravity can't remove any more of it, is that you've removed most of the risk for an entrapment. You don't have that crusted material. You don't have this material hanging on the walls like we've had some cases recently where 1,000, 2,000 pounds of corn stuck to the inside wall of a bin was knocked down by the farmer from underneath, and all that cascaded down on them and buried them. And again, that's a direct relationship to that grain quality issue. And we need to focus more attention on and just convincing farmers the importance of maintaining the quality of that grain, drying it properly. If it's being stored, if there's a concern about humidity or storage facility leakage or whatever from outside sources of moisture, that they've got to be aerated, they've got to check it, they've got to make sure that they're not having a problem with insect infestation. All of those things can directly contribute to these incidents of engulfment.
You know, I'm wondering, it appears from what I'm reading and from talking to Todd that a lot of people who work in grain bins are kids, they're teenagers. How well instructed are they in grain bin safety? And how likely are they to pay attention?
Well, to answer a question about the number, approximately 1 out of 5 of all confined space incidents that occur in agriculture involve someone under the age of 21, 20 and under. And we see that there are some very interesting groupings there. For example, we're looking at about 140 to 50 incidents involving grain transport vehicles, and almost all of them are male, and their average age is around 11. So we're talking about 11-year-old boys that are actually suffocated in grain wagons.
11-year-old boys.
Right. They're almost 100%.
And Todd, let me draw on your experience. What age kids were working in the grain bins when you were growing up?
Well, remember, the 11-year-old's not working in that truck or the wagon. And
he's along for the ride and learning the ropes.
He's playing.
He's playing.
Yeah. Yeah, he's playing. My experience is that's what I was doing, and I would have been playing, and you'd be playing in that vehicle, the grain would be flowing, obviously, and the game would be how far can you go down before you come back up, and if it's a dangerous game, but that's exactly what they're doing. I have no doubt in my mind. I know that's what I was doing.
Did any accidents occur when you were growing up?
Close, but no.
Okay. Yeah. Professor Field, of the accidents you see occurring, were some of them happening during play as compared to work?
Yes, we don't distinguish between the two, and I think the bottom line is that a person that suffocates in grain while playing in a wagon or inside of a feed bin or while they're working is still a death. Or still an entrapment that is very complex for first responders to have to deal with. But we approach the solution differently. For example, if we can alert parents that no child should ever be put inside of a grain transport wagon or any container which it's being filled with grain, whether it's a bin or wagon or truck bed or whatever. But if you're working in a bin, then that's a different approach. If you've got to be able to educate your your employees and the farmers and the family members that you should never be in there with that auger running. It's in industry, there are very clear work practices that are accepted and not accepted with respect to entrapments in grain. And one of them is that never work alone. Never work in a bin with unloading equipment operating. Never enter a bin when there is freestanding grain above your head so that it couldn't avalanche down on you. Whereas on a farm, these regulations are not enforced. Most farm operations are exempt. In fact, if you look at the total grain storage capacity in this country, over half of it exists on non-exempt operations, and where there are no federal or state regulations that are enforced in those facilities.
This is Focus on WILL, and we are talking about the sort of accidents that can happen in grain bins to farmers and members of farm families anywhere in the country. If you've worked in and around grain bins, we'd like to hear from you. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Professor Field, we're talking about just on the rough average, maybe 20 of these accidents a year, depending on various conditions. I'm wondering, is this the most common sort of accident that happens on the farm? Because I know there are other scary things that can cause trouble on a farm if you're not careful.
Well, you've raised a really interesting point, is that this is a relatively infrequent event compared to most other kinds of tragic incidents that occur on farms. It has continued to surprise me by the amount of media attention given to these incidents, because they don't occur very often. We have far more farmers who die in pickup accidents. Far more farm children die from all-terrain vehicles. We have, if you look at, for example, the single largest killer on farms today, are tractor overturns. They're highly visible out there. I mean, we know, we see all these tractors and everything, but we don't get nearly the media attention from tractor overturns that we do from grain bin incidents.
Is there something that's more frightening? The thing about everything else you've mentioned, first of all, in some ways they're identifiable. They sound like traffic accidents, and everybody has the risk of a traffic accident in this country, whether or not they're on a farm. But maybe something about the experience of being buried and entrapped in that way is just has a hold on an imagination in a different way.
I think you're hit something there with respect to the perception that people have and the fear that they may have of being buried. You know, and we just had a recent incident here in Indiana where a young boy was buried under many feet of sand at a major state park, and an extensive rescue operation, and it really captured the imagination of our state for several hours as this boy was trying to be, they were trying to recover this boy buried under the sand pile, and he came out alive. He was under, they estimate, somewhere over 10 feet of sand, and he survived that incident. And yet it was just, I got calls on that as how it related to grain, and it just seemed interesting on how much attention was given to that incident, when in fact there are other incidents involving children. You know, you look at the biggest killer of children or youth out there, and number one is motor vehicles, and number two are drownings, and three is other machine type of incidents. And it just, we sort of gotten, I think, a little bit callous to some of those other types, whereas this might be perceived as something that we're recently given more attention to, especially with some of the stories that have come out with NPR and major newspapers across the country that have included front page stories on suffocations in grain bins.
And I should note, there is a link on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus to the NPR series on this particular issue, with a lot of attention paid to the tragic deaths back in 2010 at a grain elevator Mount Carroll, Illinois, where two children died, two teenagers died. I'm wondering then, when we're talking about preventability and we're looking at all some of the much more common accidents, are they as preventable as a grain bin accident can be?
My belief is yes. I think we can prevent both types. When I go out and I've investigated probably more of these incidents on site than most anyone, and every one of them had a particular issue that if someone had intervened, that event would not have happened. You know, if somebody had not put a child on a wagon or in a truck in the field, and then or someone had locked out or tagged out the unload system in a bin, or had not entered the bin alone with nobody around, because many of these cases people don't find them for long periods, and then they eventually conclude that they're buried somewhere in the bin. But all of these things are preventable, and even the track. You know, if we go into the other aspects of farm machinery incidents, you know, each one of them, there's a moment of prevention that if someone had thought about it, had slowed down, had perceived the risk, that could have been intervened.
And I'm wondering then, maybe just on the issue of grain bin accidents, are there few basic points that are good to remember, precautions that farmers and grain elevator operators should be taking just to make sure that those bins are as safe as possible?
Well, I think I've sort of stressed some of those. Number, you know, one, we talked about maintaining the quality of the grain that goes in there so that it becomes almost unnecessary to enter a bin. Some of the major grain storage facilities in the country are moving towards zero-entry bins where there's no need to ever go in that bin, other than maybe where you're applying an insecticide or you're fumigating or something of that nature, but never with any amount of grain in the bin. And the only way that's going to be accomplished is to maintain the quality of grain in a flowable state so it can be removed from the bin without people in there poking and prodding. Number two is never enter a bin where there is unloading equipment in operation or there's unloading going on, whether it be by gravity or be an unload auger or whatever it is. Those facilities should be locked out and tagged out when anyone's in there. And then just some of these other things, such as having people around when you're entering a bin, not entering alone, assuming that, you know, you're going to be able to control all the circumstances. So there's some very critical things that if we're done, would probably prevent the overwhelming majority of these cases that I've been exposed to.
And Todd, I'm wondering, just from your experience growing up on a farm, were people, or at least the grown-ups, usually cognizant of those sort of safety precautions, or is it just easy to get careless?
It's easy to get careless. It's really easy to get careless. I mean, you're moving fast at harvest time when some of these happen. When the wagons and tractors and trucks are being unloaded, that's when we talked about the kids being stuck. And then, you know, the equipment you may not have purchased. Augers are dangerous. People lose hands and feet and clothing and all kinds of things in seconds around augers, and PTOs, power takeoffs on the back of the tractors that run the augers are dangerous. I guarantee every farmer out there probably has reached down and grabbed the auger just because it's got a shield on it that won't go around, and then stepped across it. And it's something you shouldn't do. You can't do. Going into the grain bins without the proper equipment is easy to do. You climb up, you get inside, you don't think about a rope, you leave the auger running because the grain's not flowing, or maybe you've gone inside and in I don't know which is worse, they're all bad, and you look and you're on the grain on the floor of the bin, but grain is above your head. And anytime, if you can be on the floor of the bin and the grain is above your head, you need to get out. You need to get out now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Professor Field, I was wondering, it was a caller who was suggesting, is mental alertness ever a factor in any of these accidents that people who just are not
paying proper attention to things, maybe because they're tired from work or lack of sleep or whatever?
Well, of course, there are environmental factors and there's human factors that are involved, such as fatigue and sometimes just ignorance of what the risks are. But I think, you know, as I look at these cases, take out the children, which are, I'm talking about small children. I'm not talking about late teens. But if you take that group out and look at these cases, I think there's a evidence that this is a reflection of a risk-taking society that we live in, and where we reward farmers especially for taking risks. And I want to back up and just, you know, we give all kinds of rewards out there for farmers to make choices that sometimes are potentially harmful to them, financially or otherwise. And this is just one more example, is that most of the time people get away with these things, and there's a reward associated with it. The grain is gotten out of the bin. We get the plug broken up. We get the work done quicker. And those are rewards, and a farmer may do those over and over again, but then at some point they lose that conflict or that game that they're playing with that risk, and then we see these incidents. And I think that we've got to step back and look at, you know, how much is this really worth doing, and is this worth the kinds of consequences that we see? And I think that has to be a mindful, intentional look at these problems before we're going to see a change. But as long as we reward people for getting to someplace quicker, or we acknowledge the farmer who gets his corn planted first, or the farmer who gets his crop out of the field first, and we somehow internally recognize that, and I think that encourages a pace and a rate of work that is sometimes problematic for everybody involved.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you, Professor William Field of Purdue University, for joining us on the program today. By the way, we have a link to a video about farm bin grain bin safety that you're featured on from the U.S. Corn Growers Association. It's linked to our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. And I'd like to thank Todd Gleason of the U of I Extension. You can hear him later today on the Closing Market Report here on AM 580. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll talk with a rescue worker who went inside a grain bin in Sydney, the scene of a fatal accident last month. This is Focus on WILL. Welcome back to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and Dave Wisher is with me now. He's a captain with the Urbana Fire Department. He's a member of the MABUS 28 Technical Rescue Team, and he was part of the team that went to Sydney last month when, I understand it was Roy McCarty, who was trapped in a grain bin at the Premier Cooperative Elevator in Sydney in Champaign County.
That's
and
right.
Dave, welcome to Focus.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
And I'm just wondering, I understand this case at Sydney is still under investigation. You can't really talk about every detail involved.
Yeah, and out of respect for the family, too. I mean, we can talk about some parts of the scenario, but others I'd rather not touch on.
Okay, but this is something, this is the first time you've had to go into a grain bin for this sort of thing. But it's something you've trained for.
Yes, we have a very good training program. Actually, Dave Newcomb runs a grain bin training program for the Fire Service Institute, and he's tied in with groups in Washington. It's a very good program.
Okay, well, when you get a call that someone is trapped in a grain bin or some other sort of entrapment, which I understand you're also trained for, how do you go about, I mean, what do you do to orchestrate a rescue when the team all arrives at the site, when you're all there? What's the first thing you do on the site?
One of the most important things we can do is kind of isolate and secure the scene, because you're going to have bystanders, family's going to start showing up. Firefighters, we even need to keep control of our guys there. So you're going to set up a command system, and then you're going to have a hot, warm, and cold zone. So you've got a zone, the hot zone where we're going to be working, that we need to get that either roped off or get something that shows people that you only go here if you're told to, because it's kind of like a moth to the flame. Everybody's going to want to go where the work's going on, but we need room. There's going to be a lot of equipment that's going to have to be brought in. And taking control of the scene is probably the single most important thing. And then I heard you talking earlier, you need to make sure you lock out and tag out stuff, shut down equipment, just take control of your scene.
As you know, as you're driving out there, you must be thinking of all the little factors you have to get in place. What sort of things are going through your mind as to what do I have to check on? What do I have to be certain about? What sort of things do I have to plan and organize?
Well, you're going to have to survey the scene when you get there, because obviously the amount of grain in the bin is going to be very important. I mean, if you've got 20 feet of grain underneath you, it can be different if you're working, you know, off the floor. In Sydney, we had a lot of grain that was sloping up the sides, probably 20, 25 feet. And I know that's a hazardous condition, but we took that into effect, and we built some kind of berms around where we were going to be working on the gentleman. And, you're thinking about the equipment you may need. We pulled in resources from several different entities to get all the we have special tubes that we put around the trap person.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I think, four of those on scene, and we actually used several of them to protect the workers. And then we had one around, you know, the victim.
So how many people go inside the bin in a case like this to do the rescue work?
Well, at a minimum in confined space, we'll work in pairs of two. And if there's two in, there's always two outside backing them up. We had 4 to 5 people going in because we had four working and there'd be a safety person. Obviously, the reason we're in there is because the grain didn't react the way they thought it would. So we have a person that his only job is to watch that crust and watch movement while we're working, because we're at the lowest point and we're vacuuming out and going even deeper. So it's going to want to pull that towards us. So one person's going to be dedicated just to watch our back and make sure nothing's changing around us.
What are conditions like inside? I understand it's really hot inside these bins.
It was hot and humid. Actually, being out of the direct sunlight didn't hurt. But another big thing is, you know, we have ventilation fans, but the problem with grain is you can kick up a lot of dust, and inhaling that can be, you know, just as bad. So,
were you wearing any sort of masks or ventilators or anything like that?
We have masks that we wear.
Okay. And I gathered from what I've read about it is that it sounds like there's no quick way to rescue someone from this sort of predicament.
One survey says the average on these technical rescues are 4 to 10 hours. And no, because it's so unstable and stuff, and I mean, basically, especially in grain, it's like working in water. Everything's going to flow around you, and controlling that, that's the key. You know, once we get that tube around and we're going to start vacuuming him out, well, if there's any breaches in that, or, you know, and you've got to keep going down, the grain just wants to keep leveling out, so it just keeps running in.
I'm trying to get a picture of it, and I understand that you had a tube around the victim, but you also had tubes around the workers.
Well, we didn't have the tubes put together. They're interlocking pieces that make a tube. We had the pieces separated and shoved in a line going, you know, in front of that slope.
Sort of create a wall?
Yeah, moral wall, because I don't know if it would have stopped it or not.
Okay, but just in the hopes of keeping the grain from coming in. And that's... I was wondering, do you try to empty the grain from the bin first off, or can that be done easily?
That was a half-million bushel bin, and it's 95 feet long. And down the middle, they have six little doors that open up to the auger. And they can open and close those, whichever ones they want. So around the victim, they could have left those shut. And there was some discussion of that, but we definitely couldn't have been in the bin when they were doing that, because the grain didn't react the way it was supposed to begin with. It might have flown the way they wanted, but then again, it might not have. And I mean, we do need to rely on those guys that are in there all the time too for their experience and input.
If someone is entrapped and there's a chance he's still alive, is it possible that he could suffer further injury from the movement of the grain if you're emptying the grain from the bin?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, it would have to be really well orchestrated. You'd have to be 100% sure that you're not going to do more damage. We could have closed those doors near that victim. But, you know, we were there, and we could tell that we had a shot at getting him out the way we were doing it. So that's why we continued with that.
Okay. You talked about those tubes that you use as part of your equipment. Were there other pieces of equipment that you brought with you for the job?
One of the big problems, too, working around these things is walking on the grain. So we have to have ground pads, and we had a few things. But the fire chief in Sydney made sure that we had plenty of 2x8 pieces of plywood that we laid in there. The problem is you're still going to kick grain on them, and it's like a skating rink. And my understanding is beans are even worse than corn to work in. Other than that, with just different vacuum units, shop vacs to where we had a 6-inch tube on a truck-mounted vac that they clean these tubes out with, and it can move a lot of grain. And it's just, understanding how it works and controlling it. And, otherwise it's pretty basic. Some rope to secure him. Now, if we'd have had to have removed him to out of the top or something, then you're talking some high-angle stuff where you're pulling a lot more rope and equipment. This was through a side access panel, so it's basically, once we had him out, it was a walkout.
You were getting him through a side access panel instead of from the top?
Yes.
Okay. How do you train for this sort of work?
All the rescue training that we do, I mean, you use more than one discipline on an evolution like this. This was a confined space, but we also use rope, and we have regular training at Urbana for this. The guys go to the Fire Service Institute has classes for all of these disciplines, and all of our technicians have been out there, and it's just the challenge is keeping up with continuing education with this stuff and utilizing whatever you got. Like I say, a buddy of mine, Dave Newcomb, has this grain bin training program that it's a mini bin that you actually get in. But I can tell you it's nothing like when you get from a 500 bushel little bin to a 500,000 bushel. It was a totally different environment in there. But a lot of the training did kick in, and I mean, you go through certain steps, throughout this.
Now, this was the first time that you had done a work like this in a grain bin. Is there other confined space and entrapment situations that you train for, and have you had to work with any of those?
Urbana is it's the MABUS technical rescue team for this area, and we train in vertical or high angle, collapse, confined space, and trench. And we've actually had a couple of trench rescues in Urbana, and they were both successful. As for confined space, we've been in some confined spaces. Most industrial complexes are going to have little areas that are not meant for human habitation, but they'll get in there to clean and stuff, and we'll have to get in there for one reason or another.
You know, at the beginning of this program, we talked with a farmer from Iowa who was trapped in a
very
grain
lucky
bin.
Young man.
And I'm just wondering, in a case like this, he was someone, he didn't think he'd live to get out. But when you're working to try to uncover someone who's buried, whether it's in a grain bin or another situation, is there a sense of urgency that affects what you do?
Well, of course. And, until, especially if they're totally buried like that, until we can determine that when it goes from a rescue to a recovery, that they've passed. And even after that happens, there's still, we want to maintain the dignity for the victim. And we also know that their family starting to gather outside. And, and it's out of respect for them, too, that we continue and we want to get them out as quick as we can, just for closure for everybody.
Okay. I don't know how this elevator was equipped in Sydney. Did it have, and is that something you can talk about? Did it have any of the safety equipment we hear mentioned, like the harnesses, et cetera?
They actually, I know, several guys work for those elevators, and they are very safety conscious. This was one of those, little blip in time where a bad choice, I think, came back to bite them. But they're very safety conscious. They do have all that equipment. I know they do train to that stuff, mm-hmm. Wearing their safety procedures. I know they do that.
These sort of accidents, this is the first one you've worked on. Had you heard of others? Had you met people who've had to work in rescue efforts with these sort of things?
We work closely with Danville and, Charleston and Normal. They all have technical teams. Danville's had a couple of grain bin rescues, and I think it was, theirs turned out that I believe it was a rescue. The gentleman was alive. And they actually, we get called up for that. Our team begins to assemble in case they need extra manpower and we're ready to deploy. But I didn't get into many specifics with them. I know sometimes they can cut holes in the sides of these bins.
They can actually do that.
But they need to be careful with that too, because depending on how much product's in there, if you drain it all off one side, possible failure. If you've got the majority against one side of the bin, it could possibly collapse. So, understanding how it's going to react is important. But I've seen pictures, too, where they've torn out the whole side of it to pull the product away.
What sort of communications does your team have with the families, with the families of victims or the families of people that you rescue? Is there a point person who acts as a go-between, or are you talking with them directly?
Actually, it's. I'm glad you asked that because Mavis 28 just established a chaplain program, and two of our chaplains were out there. I'm also one of the chaplains for the team, and that's a very important point because those people do need someone to take care of them, you know, and give them answers and take care of their needs, but you don't want your incident commander or people working the scene necessarily to have to do that. At the end, there's probably discussions on what happened and what we did and everything, but initially, I'm thankful that a couple of the chaplains showed up and were there for them.
Okay. We are out of time, but my thanks to you, Fire Captain Dave Wisher with the Urbana Fire Department's Mabus 28 Technical Rescue Team. Thank you for talking about what emergency workers do in the case of these grain bin entrapments, and thank you very much for your work.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
And our thanks to our other guests today, Todd Gleason of the U of I Extension, Professor William Field of Purdue University, and Eric Baker from New Providence, Iowa, a survivor of a grain bin accident. We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. And there you will also find links to more information about grain bin entrapments. Remember, Focus is live each weekday morning at 10, a replay at 8 p.m. on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.